The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
The date of the general election still hasn't been declared. I know there has been endless speculation about when the date would be, but the fact that Taoiseach has now softened his position in respect of it being in 2025 means we know we're in the final furlong. It's just a matter of narrowing down how far away is the finish post. To help us do that, Sean Defoe, our political correspondent, is with us. Good morning, Sean.
Morning, Anton. Thanks for having me.
What's the smart money on at this stage?
29th right. November, still.
When will we know?
We could actually have a very good indication today, because the business committee of the Dáil is meeting at 3 o'clock later, and that decides the business for the Dáil, as it says, for next week and what they're going to be debating. And the big thing to get done now is the finance bill. So if they come back and say, well, look, suddenly on the agenda, all stages of the finance bill to be done on Wednesday, which could well be, and then a vote on the Wednesday night, then you have a pretty clear indication it's going to be called on the Thursday or Friday. Now, speaking to people in Simon Harris's camp, they have said that he would prefer to call it on a Friday. So the only question is that next Friday or the following Friday? If it's going to be the 29th, next Friday is the absolute last day that he could do it. But speaking to people around government, they're not expecting this to drag. Finance bill will be guillotined into next week. Probably see it called next Friday, and then the 29th is polling day.
Is there anybody left in the Oireachtas, or are they all up lampposts everywhere around the country?
They're all around. The only people I ran into yesterday in Leinster House was people who were clearing out their offices. And literally TDs who had been there for 20, 30 years, taking 20, 30 years of files out to either shred them or take them out in the big boxes, like someone who's just been fired at a Goldman Sachs. You know, it was so very few people. They are all hitting the road. And even getting a TD on the phone at the minute is difficult, because they're like, oh, no, sorry, I'm out canvassing all the time. And they ring you back at 10 o'clock at night when they're no use to anybody.
Which does go to whether or not the election gets called quickly, because at this point we are in full blown election mode, all bar the official calling of it.
Yeah, the actual campaign will probably be 3 weeks, but in reality, it's going to be 5 weeks, because people have been on the doors. People have been on the doors since August, really, thinking that this was coming, and they have been heavily on the doors. I know in our own estate, I've been canvassed. The blink doorbell has been going off when I'm not home with certain TDs, and sorry, I missed you cards already coming through the door. You can see posters going up around the country that are flirting very dangerously with that no posters before an election thing by, oh, we have a public meeting, that is very clearly a sticker on a board that's ready to be ripped off. So they're out and about, and they're getting ready, and they're all getting very nervous as well.
Talk to me about the knocking on doors. In an Irish context, how significant is the ground game versus things like media, social media postering?
I think that's really interesting at this election, because the ground war is hugely important, and the sort of a big debate that is going on, at least in my head, of the ground war versus the social media and the air war. And if you look particularly at Fine Gael, where they have a whole load of problems on the ground, and yet they've got this bounce nationally in the polls, and Simon Harris, who's a really competent media performer, and if you believe social media is in every town in the country at all times, he's omnipresent at the minute. But it's very important, because you remember who has knocked to your door. If you have a chat with somebody, if you meet the TD and you shake his hand and they kind of chat about something and they seem decent, just sort of remember that when you go into the ballot box. You remember who called first with the leaflets, which was the first one around, and who you haven't seen in the last 5 years. So I think that is important. The social media one is interesting, and I was talking to a TD yesterday who was wondering if it might be a bit less important this time than it was in 2020. The reasoning being, the makeup of people who are on certain social media platforms, particularly X and YouTube, has changed quite radically. And X has gone from being Twitter last time around, where there was, you know, it wasn't the nicest place in the world, but there was a bit more rational discussion and debate about different issues. Whereas now the algorithm is all geared towards the US election, it's geared towards the right. It's a much unfriendlier place for journalists and politicians and other people to discuss. So they think, actually, if you're focusing all your time on that, you're not winning over anybody. You might be, if you're on the right, you might win a few votes, or you might stir up something or get involved in a story. But that really the likes of Instagram, the likes of YouTube are where the war is going to be fought, and TikTok in particular. Which brings us, I suppose, to some of the stranger bits that have been going on. Michael Healy-Rae, have you seen these AI generated videos he's been putting up?
Yeah, I was talking to Andrea Gilligan about it yesterday, because as you heard of the promo during the break, she was discussing it on the show. And it's one of those interesting ones, because if you said to somebody, well, a political candidate is using a video of a deepfake video of Taylor Swift to gain political advantage, you would say, oh, that's completely unethical. But if you add, it's sort of funny, well, suddenly now it becomes acceptable.
Yeah, it absolutely does. It all depends on the character. Like Donald Trump saying that Taylor Swift had endorsed him falsely and he was set upon online and destroyed, and Michael Healy-Rae doing it. Now, he got a fair bit of criticism. And like, it's sort of, you wonder, is it slightly flirting with the law? I wouldn't be totally surprised if there was a solicitor's letter from Taylor Swift saying, excuse me, Mr. Healy-Rae, whoever you are, take this down. Though I imagine they've factored that in. And if Michael Healy-Rae...
At the heart of it, you are still, even if you are doing it by a joke, you're still using Taylor Swift to garner attention and votes. That's the reality of it. Whether you do it funny or whether you do it straight, same thing.
Yeah, that is, you're getting attention on it. Like, and if imagine if he did get the solicitor's letter, how much attention he'd get out of that? There'd be like a contrite or not so contrite apology on social media. Oh, we're sorry, my best friend Taylor, who's messaging me during the election, by the way, voted Hughie Ray, you know? But it's just, it's all a bit creepy. Anyway, I don't like this deep. I wish Michael Hughie Ray would go back to writing campaign songs because they were actually good.
Do you think that that kind of thing makes a difference? Because, again, if we look at the difference across the water versus here, in America, there is a huge amount of just you need to feed the media beast and you can't knock on 150 million doors. Here, does that matter? Does a TikTok presence, does an Instagram following convert into votes?
You are reaching people you're probably not going to hit at the doors when you're knocking, and you're probably not going to meet them maybe on their commute because you're just not going to get around every bit of the constituency as much as you might try, particularly say somewhere like Kerry, which is huge, and they will get around a lot of it, but they'll focus on their main areas as well. So you are hitting a different kind of person, and just being seen is enough to come up in that scroll and you see, God, I'm seeing your man a lot. He's doing a lot of stuff. He must be busy. The Simon Harris effect, you know, that he is seen to be out all the time. I'm in Simon Harris' constituency. I'm in a WhatsApp group that he has, right? This broadcast WhatsApp group that's meant to be for local news. There was about three messages in it in the 6 months leading up to 3 weeks ago. Twice a day at the moment, they're coming in with photos of, here's Simon Harris in a field. Here he is at a cafe down in Greystones. Here he is wherever, you know. So they are definitely bombarding in the view that to be seen is to get a vote.
Now, if we go from the ground game then to the national game, the ever since, I think it wasn't at Saatchi with Haughey back in the day when they started that sort of 3 week tour of the country, keep him running at all times, ideally out of a helicopter. That style of campaigning, we will have Mary Lou McDonald doing it. We'll have Micheál Martin doing it. We'll have Simon Harris doing it. And the leaders of the smaller parties. Who is going to be good? Who is going to be bad? And what do we look for?
Oh, that's a great question. Who's going to be good and bad? Well, look, Harris is great at it. There's no two ways about it. You know, I had an opposition party say he reminds them of Bertie going around the place, that he just has a way with people when he runs into them that is so different to what Leo Varadkar was, who was awkward in those social situations, didn't like really being in those big crowds where he had to kiss babies and shake hands. Harris loves all of that. So on a tour, and you can be sure there'll be two or three people following him with iPhones recording every little bit of it. Micheál Martin is a really good door-to-door campaigner as well. Like, he is very, very impressive on the canvas too. Roderick O'Gorman, I haven't been out with him canvassing. I don't know. He's a bit of a different character. So, you know, that's a sort of a wait and see. And Mary Lou McDonald is great at it again. Now, she is coming up against a different sort of wave this time. But it's so easy to forget. 4 years ago, I mean, Mary Lou McDonald, everyone you met on a canvas with her was loved her. She was the best knees. She was the bee's knees. And if do you remember these rallies that they held shortly after the last election? They filled out the Custom House. They did other ones across the country. Thousands of people queuing to come and see Mary Lou and to see Pierce. So she does have that common touch. She's probably lost a bit of it in the last few years by being just more in the Dáil. She's obviously had her own issues, all the rest of it, and hasn't been put in those positions where she can shine. But if someone meets Mary Lou McDonald on the street, or indeed in a studio, if you meet her here, a very personable person. So I think we'll be quite good at that.
Text saying, I told an FG canvasser I wouldn't be voting their way. They didn't even ask why. Ground game is weak. For canvassing perspectives, what is it that makes somebody a good or bad canvasser? Because you could argue in that instance that if you're greeted at the door by somebody who says, I'm voting number one the other way, you say, thanks, good luck, goodbye, I won't waste my time anymore. What should the canvassers, if you are opening your door, how do you know that you've got a good canvasser or a bad canvasser?
There's two streets of opinion on it. So one is that you do that and you just don't bother wasting your time. The other that I hear from other people in Fine Gael a lot is you have a little bit of the argument. Like, don't spend your entire hour on a door, it's not going to vote for you. But do a 5 minutes and put the seed of doubt in their mind, and they might give you a third or fourth preference that you get along the way. Sign of a good canvasser is how many people they have with them, really. If they are out on their own, usually not a good sign that they have a big machine or a support of the party. If you see a canvasser out, the best oiled machines that I have seen, Joan Burton actually was really, really good at this. I followed her. I was embedded with Joan Burton on the 2016 campaign, and I could hardly keep up with her. She was fantastic on the doors. You know, someone you might not suspect. I didn't, certainly at the time, in that they have a team. The team is always five doors ahead. And, you know, has the door sussed. And when the candidate comes along, can give a little bit of a wave and say, don't bother, don't come up this way. Or, yeah, come on in, have the bit of a
like
chat.
Like a recon team.
Like, yes, exactly. Like the advanced party going in to scout it. So that's what to watch out for. They've got a good few people. And one I've seen that I really like that I saw in the locals is people leaving messages on the door, the Ring doorbell. If there's nobody there, you don't get an answer to the knock. Press the Ring doorbell and go, hey, I'm such and such a candidate. Missed you. Sorry to miss you. Here's my details. Vote for me.
That's genius, because we had a text that said, we've been receiving leaflets in the mailbox here in Skibbereen. No time for them to knock and chat. We'll remember that.
Ooh.
Policy-wise, then, the big challenge, of course, in this is Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil. How far do they distance themselves so that they exist as separate entities versus how closely do they align so they're transfer friendly?
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one. And already you can see some of the separation. Micheál Martin making digs over the justice portfolio in particular, and Mary Fitzpatrick and others, whereas, you know, Fine Gael will go after other areas like agriculture and education where they perceive that Fianna Fáil are a little bit weaker. But it's such a strange election, because both know they can't get back into power really without the other. So there's only so much digging you can do. And when you look at all the constituencies, there are so many areas where the final seat is going to be either Fine Gael or Fianna Fáil. And you could end up with a scenario where that splits and they end up, you know, relatively even. But if three or four of them all bounce one way, if there's a bit of a Fine Gael surge in three or four of those close constituencies, you know, Cork South West, Dublin, Fingal East, Dunleary, suddenly you see a bit of a gap emerging, and then that would create a problem, because this government was all about parity of esteem. They were really near each other in the same size. They did the transfer over of Taoiseach. If one comes back significantly larger than the other, that's a much more difficult negotiation.
Have you kissed your family goodbye and told them you'll see them in early December?
We have a nice plan for this Saturday, and then it's goodbye. I love you. I will see you again. I'll leave a message on the Ring doorbell myself.
Sean, thank you very much. That is Sean Defoe, our own political correspondent.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.